E.T. Phone Home.
I'm just having some brewski beers at my Mojo Dojo Casa house.
Wendy, I'm home.
There's no place like home.
Welcome to the House of Cinema podcast. I am your host, Joe Aragon. With me today, Sydney Volpe. And in the house today, a discussion on Sundance 2024, a film festival that both Sydney and I attended in person and virtually. So what we're going to do today is kind of recap the movies we saw, the ones we loved, and maybe the ones that disappointed us. You know, the idea here is to go through our five favorite of Sundance. There may be some overlap, though, but that is only natural since we saw many of the same movies. But before we jump into the actual movies, Sydney, how was Sundance for you? This is both our first time in person in Park City. How'd it go for you?
Hello. Sundance was a trip. It was a lot. I think we both have had a great time, even though it was you're go while you're at Sundance. Like, there's a lot of moving around, a lot of different theaters, a lot of different movies. You're meeting a lot of awesome new people. But it was great. I mean, it's always great to see people in person again. We got to spend a lot of time with our friend Chris. Many people know him as Movies Are Therapy or Kit Laser. We had him on the Patreon to talk about Sundance. But I loved it. I mean, what did you think about the differences between a really big festival like Sundance, and then the only other festival you and I have covered really in depth in person is Fantastic Fest, which is amazing. We both love it, but obviously very different because it only happens at one theater. It's a much smaller, more genre focused festival.
It's so interesting because going to Sundance, I was very excited, and like you said, our biggest experience is something with like Fantastic Fest, which is, you know, not a small festival. It's not like we're not talking like a small city festival where you get, you know, a couple hundred people.
Right.
There's a lot of people at Fantastic Fest, but it is, like you said, it takes place in Austin at the Alamo Drafthouse Theater, which is, you know, multiple theaters, so there's no traveling. Like, you go to Alamo and that's it. Everything is there. It's
yep.
Very straightforward, a little bit more organized because it is, you know, a little bit smaller of a festival. Sundance is big. It's a big festival. It's the first big festival of every year. It takes place in January. There's not going to be another big festival until March. So it is larger, and I think that was kind of the biggest shock factor for maybe you and I, was just the amount of traveling needed to get from place to place, you know, from theater to theater. There were some that were closer in terms of like walking distance, but it's also...
Right.
Park City, it's a little bit colder. One night it was snowing. You don't want to walk all the time because it does get cold. So that was kind of the biggest thing for me, was like just getting used to the traveling. But festivals, you and I have talked about it several times about how incredible they are in terms of not just watching movies early and experiencing them before people, but really just connecting with so many people in and out of the industry who just love film is really the biggest reward out of festivals like this. And Sundance, I think that was also the biggest surprise. I mean, obviously expected to run into a lot of people that we interact with on the internet and social media, but Sundance was really just filled with people who are so excited and so passionate about films because it is an indie film festival. You know, there's so many people there who are trying to sell their movie and get their movie out to the world to be watched. I think that is probably the biggest difference between Sundance and the other festivals we've been to. It's like, you know, if we do go to South by Southwest or Cannes or TIFF, like a lot of those movies, they're being distributed. They're going to be coming out and being released.
Mm-hmm.
But Sundance, like, there's possibility we've seen movies that will not see the light of day for another 6 to 8 months, maybe more than a year. And I think that's a really interesting aspect to Sundance that makes it kind of special.
Yeah. Isn't that so interesting? Like, I know there are a couple films. I watched one online at Sundance 2 years ago and it still doesn't have distribution. So that's interesting. And it is very interesting that Sundance kind of sets the scene or gets things in motion for kind of the festival sphere for each year.
Yeah. So I love Sundance. I've done it virtually several times. Of course, that's the beauty about Sundance as well, is they do offer obviously an amazing slate of movies in person, but they do offer a good amount of great movies online as well, which is why, like, I always try to encourage people who are interested in festivals is maybe to start with like virtual Sundance and try to get in that way and then eventually make your way to in person. All these festivals, by the way, I get a lot of comments about this, is like, how do you get to go? How do you apply? Many of them, if not all of them, I mean, all the big ones, they're open to the public. Anybody can buy a ticket. It's, you know, it is a matter of buying passes, buying tickets, you know, scheduling travel and lodging. It can be pricey. It's not easy. But I don't want people to think that they're exclusive to press or industry people. I mean, these are open for anybody to kind of go in and enjoy. So if this is something that interests you, definitely check out Sundance next year virtually or in person and see what's available. I think there's a lot of great opportunity there.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, it's definitely worth kind of researching different festivals, see, yeah, what's near you, what kind of specializes in things you might be more interested in. But yeah, good to know that you don't need passes. Can be expensive depending on your situation, and it's totally possible to buy individual tickets to individual movies. I did that once for the New York Film Festival. Yeah, but they're open to everyone. But even if you are interested in applying as a member of the press, take a chance on yourself. I mean, I was not even sure that I was going to get into Sundance as press. And obviously it was amazing. It was an amazing opportunity. Yeah, you would be surprised. I think they're very good at letting a really wide variety of people into the festivals. I met so many people from all walks of criticism and media and journalism just standing in line waiting to get into a movie. So yeah, that's important to know. They're definitely accessible.
Well, before we jump into our five favorite movies of Sundance, kind of tell us your expectations going into the festival. Were there any movies like high priority lists, like I need to watch this movie no matter what? And then we'll kind of, once we talk about the five, we'll talk about the ones that surprised you the most. But I'm curious, before you got to Park City, what were the ones that were like, I need to watch them?
That's a good question, because now that, you know, things totally change once you've like been at the fest and seen everything. But yeah, going in, there were those big names. We were like, oh my gosh, I have to see that. For me, I saw The TV Glow was definitely one. Love Lies Bleeding, of course. I feel like was kind of the movie of the fest going in, like that, because Kristen Stewart is like Miss Sundance. She is like the queen of Sundance. That was such a big movie from her. Hitman, I was interested in seeing, but Hitman also has kind of like made the rounds already. It premiered at Venice, I believe. So people have been talking about it for a while. And In a Violent Nature, the horror film, was one I was really interested in seeing, just because that was, it felt very much like a true genre film, something that you and I would both be interested in checking out. So I think those were the real big ones for me, honestly. How about you?
I would probably echo many of the same ones. Love Lies Bleeding was like, I need to watch Love Lies Bleeding, or I'm going to Love Lies Bleeding myself.
What?
I don't know. You know, I was very
so true,
adamant I was going to watch Love Lies Bleeding no matter what happened. I saw The TV Glow was so high priority until I had a 12-hour flight delay.
Yeah.
I missed opening night, and then the following day, scheduling conflicts prevented me from seeing it. And the last time it was showing while I was there was in Salt Lake City, which is 40 minutes
another
away.
Another thing to consider about going to Sundance is that Salt Lake City and Park City are not as close as I believed.
No, not at all. There. I thought they were a lot closer. They are not. I mean, you can Uber from Park City to Salt Lake City. It's just pricey, and it's going to take you 45 minutes, you know, at the bare minimum. You know,
I've met a lot of people who rent a car while they're there, which I honestly think is smart.
Yeah, I don't trust myself to drive in the snow. I am LA based, California born. I would not trust myself driving in that weather. So
actually, I haven't driven in years, so maybe I shouldn't be doing that.
So that I saw TV Glow, I missed it. That's my biggest regret of the fest. You know, I feel like every film festival we've been to, there's always like one or two movies.
No one talks about that.
No one does talk about
their big, you know, the one that got away.
Yeah, the Great White Buffalo. So anyways, my Moby Dick was I saw The TV Glow. I did not get to that one, but I will watch it once it's available immediately. And I'm sure we'll get into that later. Soderbergh's Presence was a big one. Hitman was a big one. Yeah. In a Violent Nature was a big one. Love Me was a big one.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll get more into all of those later and kind of where they sat for us. But overall, I think I knocked out most of the stuff I really wanted to see. And of course, there were some surprises. But for now, let's move on to our five favorite. We won't rank them. We'll just choose our five favorite. We'll give a quick plot summary, our quick reactions. No spoilers because, you know, they're not out yet. So eventually they will be, but no spoilers. And just kind of our reaction to those movies so people can have them on their radar.
Indeed.
Do you want to start us off or should I start us off? What do you want to do?
Why don't you go?
I go? Wow. Yeah. Okay. In no particular order, here's the first one I want to mention that kind of fell in love with and have been thinking about nonstop. Let's start with Steven Soderbergh's Presence.
Steven Soderbergh's Presence is making people uncomfortable.
So if you've heard about this movie, it's either two ways. One is because a tweet was posted about some people walked out of the movie because it was so intense and uncomfortable. Or you heard about it because Neon has officially picked it up and they will be the ones behind its distribution. Presence is a movie, like I said, directed by Steven Soderbergh, starring Kalina Lang, Lucy Liu, Chris Sullivan, Julia Fox, Wes Mulholland, and Eddie Madej. It is a smaller cast as most Steven Soderbergh movies of recent have been. Here's a quick plot summary. A family moves into a suburban house and becomes convinced they're not alone. That's all you get.
Oh, wow.
I will say, it's not a spoiler. Someone asked me if this, you know, I posted a review on Letterboxd. Someone was like, did you spoil the movie? And it's not really a spoiler, but I'm going to say this now. The movie is unique, or it's kind of catching a lot of buzz because it is filmed in a way that is from the perspective of the ghost in the movie. And that's kind of like the whole, I don't want to say gimmick, because the way Steven Soderbergh handles it is far beyond a gimmick. He is very talented with the camera. But that's kind of like why this movie has a little bit more buzz than your typical haunted house story.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a spoiler because you must.
You know immediately. You know it's not like. Immediately. Yeah, it's not like it.
The
it
perspective
switches POV.
Of the specter.
Yeah, perspective of the specter. So I am a huge Soderbergh fan. I'm going to just get that bias out of the way. There's very few Soderbergh movies I don't enjoy. I've been a big fan of his for many, many years now. So I was ecstatic to be able to watch this at the premiere night. And in typical Soderbergh fashion, it is a little bit on the slower side. I think that's going to be like the biggest thing for people. Mm-hmm. Is like, oh, nothing really happens until the last 20 minutes. But I love that. I think he does a great job setting up an atmosphere. And I think this particular movie is kind of like, I don't want to say his like masterclass, but it seems to me like he really understands his objective and his intention here. And it really works. Once we do get to those last 20 minutes, you could hear a pin drop in the theater. People were holding their breath because of certain moments and scenes. Everybody's incredible in the movie. It really just feels like Soderbergh is at this point in his career where feels like he can do whatever he wants and people will just fund him. Because he's Soderbergh. He's not afraid to experiment with the camera, experiment with storytelling and narrative. And I can't help but adore that. And I think that some people are really going to love this. Soderbergh heads are going to love it. I think non-Soderbergh fans may have some troubles with it still, but I still encourage people to check it out. Did you see Kimmy by chance?
I did see Kimmy. Yeah, I was going to say, I love that you're a soda head and then you're always pulling for him. Joe texted me, I think it was after the Q&A, and he was like, Soderbergh just hates the spotlight and just wants to like make his little movies and like experiment with the medium. And
it's so
I think
true.
That's really awesome. You know, dare I compare him to M. Night Shyamalan in the way that I think they're both just very bold filmmakers that aren't afraid to take big swings and aren't interested in kind of molding themselves into this box of Hollywood expectations. And you're always going to watch their movies just because you know they're doing something interesting. I liked Kimmy. I didn't love it. I don't always mesh with Soderbergh's films. But Presence was definitely one that got away for me at this festival because I was hearing such interesting things. And it's just taking a lot of risks, doing something different. I want to see filmmakers doing something different and doing what's calling them for a certain story. So yeah, very excited to hear that you liked this one.
Yeah, really big fan of this movie. I'm really excited that Neon has it, because Neon does have that kind of pull. They don't have that A24 pull, but they do kind of have that attraction in a similar way, where they do have a built-in audience that tends to kind of go for their movies, and they know what they're doing in terms of how to market the movie and get it out. And they're obviously big fans of the movie, and I'm really excited to see it get put out, see people's reaction to it, because it will be interesting. I think Soderbergh, the other thing about Soderbergh is so interesting. I can confirm, I did text you that he just, the guy just loves making movies. Mm-hmm. At the Q&A, he was given the microphone before the movie to introduce the film, and he was like, yeah, here's my movie. There's nothing for me to say. Let's just watch it, and I'll talk to you afterwards. And then he just like ended it 30 seconds after, and then the Q&A started afterwards, and he was just, not that he was short and rude, he just like, it doesn't really care for the limelight or spotlight. Like, he's obviously very proud of his work, but he just doesn't feel the need to brag or talk about it. He just wants to like make movies.
Yeah, and that's, I feel, what's like so admirable. A lot of filmmakers who, I mean, Q&As are great, and it's always good to hear filmmakers talk about their process and their films, but a lot of, there gets to a point where it's like, they probably just want the art to speak for itself, you know? It's like, that's why I made the movie. This is how I'm communicating with you.
Exactly. And it's so, it's just so interesting, because he's putting out like two movies a year sometimes. Like, he already is in production for his new movie called Black Bag, which is a spy thriller starring Kate Blanchett and Michael Fassbender.
He's so weird.
So it's like, he's just constantly making movies and just working. And I think he is the director. I can't remember what. Do you remember that story? There's another director who like sends their work to Soderbergh to edit. And is it Fincher? I can't remember who it is.
I thought he edited, I was going to say Killers of the Flower Moon. It wasn't that. But yeah, there was some movie that came out this past year. They're like, they sent it to Soderbergh or whatever, and he made it like 30 minutes shorter just like for fun or something.
Yeah, well, Soderbergh,
maybe it was
is
the killer.
I can't remember who it was. It was a recent movie. They just like, they send him the movie and Soderbergh will edit. And in the Q&A, he did say editing is the most important process of the filmmaking process for him. He loves editing. He adores editing.
Wow.
And so he's constantly editing, and that's like the biggest thing for him. So I'm not surprised that other filmmakers, like his peers, are constantly reaching out to him to edit, because he's
there's this famous rumored Soderbergh fan cut of 2001 A Space Odyssey, which has seemingly disappeared from existence. I don't think you can see it right now.
There's a Raiders of the Lost Ark one that was just trending on Twitter just the other day. He like re-edited Raiders of the Lost Ark and like put in music from The Social Network into Raiders of the Lost
and
Ark.
Put it in black and white.
Yeah.
Like, go off. Why not?
He's just kind of doing his thing, and I kind of love him for that.
That's an artist.
Anyways, I went too long on that one. My bad.
Well, but I would like to, before we wrap this one up, plug, because I know he won't, that Joe interviewed the cast of this film on the press line, and I think that's amazing.
Thank you. I wasn't planning on plugging, but I did get to talk to Julia, the whole cast about presence and what the movie means to them. And I did get to ask them all their favorite Soderbergh movie, and everybody had a different answer. A lot of people said Sex, Lies, and Videotape. Got a couple Ocean's Elevens, a couple Magic Mikes. Mm-hmm. I got one Traffic, which I thought was really interesting.
Good variety.
But anyways.
When I received that close-up picture of Lucy Liu, I had a full-body response.
You had a full-body response. I almost crumbled.
I know, you were there.
Fell to my knees. But anyways, that was my number, not my number one, but that is one of my five presents, Steven Soderbergh's presents, picked up by Neon. Look out for it later this year. I'm sure it'll come out. Let's transition to you. What is one of your picks?
Okay. You know what I'm going to start with? I'm going to start with a movie called Exhibiting Forgiveness.
Oh,
you have not watched this, correct?
I have not watched it. No,
all right, then we'll even the playing field. Exhibiting Forgiveness is the directorial debut of Titus Kaphar. He wrote and directed it. Titus Kaphar is actually like a career artist. And but he finally, it was interesting hearing him in interviews talking about, you know, the benefits of telling a story through film. He's like, when I make a painting, I can only communicate like this one moment. But in film, I can communicate what happens before and after it. And Exhibiting Forgiveness, the synopsis on Letterboxd is utilizing his paintings to find freedom from his past. A Black artist on the path to success is derailed by an unexpected visit from his estranged father, a recovering addict desperate to reconcile. Together, they learn that forgetting might be a greater challenge than forgiving. So it's a drama. It's a very grounded drama. Andre Holland is in the lead role, and oh my God, he is so good. Andre wow. Holland, first time I really start to like acknowledge him as an actor was in the Castle Rock TV show. Random, but he was so good in that. And I was like, who mm-hmm. is this guy? Like, why don't I see him more? And that's what I'm seeing in so many Letterboxd reviews is like, Andre Holland is a leading man. And it's time that we realize that as a society.
I mean, he's excellent in Moonlight. I will also shout out High Flying Bird. He's the lead in that movie, directed by Soderbergh. Steven Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Which is, the whole movie is filmed on an iPhone, it kind of chronicles Andre Holland, who's like a NBA talent agent during the NBA lockdown. It's incredibly interesting movie, really fun movie, and he's very good in it. Glad to see he's in a leading role. I have not watched this one, but I will add it to my list of movies to watch out for.
Yeah, very, very good. I just thought it was, well, so what I like, forgiveness in parental relationships, very personal thing for me. You know, everyone has those themes that they're watching something and they just really click with it. Mm-hmm. But what I loved about this movie is that it does not equate forgiveness with reconciliation. It doesn't treat reconciliation or like a amended relationship or a continued relationship as the end goal of forgiveness. It treats forgiveness as an internal process that allows you to unburden yourself from anger and from resentment. And I really appreciated like how it dealt with that and also how he processed it through his art. And Titus Gafar created all the artwork from the film, and it's like beautiful. And it's also kind of this like after sun feeling to it, where he's kind of reflecting on these memories and how, you know, they're kind of, he's like commenting on how he's really only remembering the bad ones, and they kind of all get fused together. And highly, highly recommend this one. I thought it was so good.
Great. All right. Exhibiting Forgiveness. I've added it to my watch list.
Nice.
I will just say one that we both probably have on our list. This is Get Out of the Way. Let's talk about Rose Glasses, Love Lies Bleeding. Kristen Stewart, Katie O'Brien, Ed Harris, Dave Franco, Jenna Malone. It is Rose Glasses, I believe, second feature. Her first one was St. Maud from a couple years ago. That was during the pandemic that one came out. Were you a St. Maud fan?
I am a St. Maud fan. I like Love Lies Bleeding significantly more.
Interesting.
Okay. Are you in that boat?
I'm in that boat. I don't know if I like it significantly more. So, but I do like it more.
Right. I feel like it's tough because I always like films that feel bigger, that feel like there's more going on. Clearly, Love Lies Bleeding has a bigger budget, has more star power, more characters that are more, you know, the script is more complicated. But St. Maud in its own right, I mean, religious horror, I think it's hard to come across really good, compelling religious horror.
Fair point.
Again, with the Rose Glass and her endings, she's making a name for herself. Ooh. There.
Rose Glass. I text Sydney after this movie and I said, Rose Glass is not the next, but she's our generation's kind of like Cronenberg.
Yeah.
And I will say for the podcast, Sydney did not believe me.
I looked him dead in the eye and I said, I don't really think that's true.
She did.
Because, well, and that's what's so exciting about Love Lies Bleeding is that it's like clearly Rose Glass is not a one-trick pony. I mean, she pulls this out of her hat. It's like this it's like this erotic thriller that has guns and steroids and drugs and murder. And yeah, and after I came out of Love Lies Bleeding, it was the first thing I texted Joe. You were fucking right. That was Cronenberg. But it was also like so much, it was also so through and through Rose Glass.
Exactly. Well said. Yeah. Here's the plot summary. It does come out March 8th. It's the one movie that we're going to talk about here. Maybe another
you
one
can
later.
Actually watch.
That you'll be watching in like less than 90 days, less than 60 days at this point.
Yeah.
Here's the plot summary. Reclusive gym manager Lou falls hard for Jackie, an ambitious bodybuilder headed through town to Las Vegas in pursuit of her dream. But their love ignites violence, pulling them deep into the web of Lou's criminal family. Mm-hmm. Revenge gets ripped. That is the tagline.
I love like movies that deal with like flesh and the physical form, and just the fact that Katie O'Brien is like an actual dude. She's jacked. She's jacked the hell up. She's an actual bodybuilder. So obviously she's perfect for the role physically, but she also, I mean, this is a star-making performance. She's so good. I mean, yeah, it was one of my favorite roles from Kristen Stewart, but Katie O'Brien here is almost more exciting just because I feel like this is her big moment, you know?
I agree. I don't want to take away from Stewart's performance because she is...
She's so good.
Really good in this movie. But Katie O'Brien is the more flashy kind of role in this movie. So she kind of takes the spotlight a lot. And deservedly so. She's so incredible in this movie.
So
but
good.
Whole cast I found really, really compelling. And the story goes in some wild directions that I don't want to spoil. I think when this movie does hit wide release in March 8th, obviously you and I will cover it at that point in more detail with kind of spoiler territory. But it is, I think, such a momentous moment for Rose Glass as a filmmaker, really solidifying her kind of place in this world of up-and-coming filmmakers making these very provocative and like thought-provoking movies. I am just so excited for her career, because if this is like just the tip of the iceberg, I can't wait for what she decides to explore next.
Yeah, well said. Also surprisingly funny.
Very funny.
My theater was laughing more than I expected.
It was wild. It was violent, funny, sexy. There's a lot of words you can throw at this movie and kind of let it stick to the wall. So
I think people are going to go crazy for it.
This is on your top five, right? Or not in your, it's in your five, right?
This is my two.
Ooh. Oh, you actually ranked them? Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I have a ranking going. No one look at it too glaringly before I'm done watching everything.
Okay. So I have Love Lies Bleeding. You have Love Lies Bleeding. What's another one of your movies of your five?
I think, why don't I do one we've both seen? I'm going to say A Real Pain.
Ooh.
I'm kicking, A Real Pain is not technically in my top five, but I'm going to kick Hitman out because it didn't premiere at Sundance.
Oh,
I'm gonna
okay,
be
well, I'm keeping Hitman in.
Okay, we can talk about Hitman. So okay, then good. I'll put in A Real Pain.
Okay, not in my five, but I do like Real Pain.
Yeah. So A Real Pain is Jesse Eisenberg's sophomore film, his first film his first film might have been from more than a couple of years ago. Is that like 2020
or 2021?
Oh, 2022. It was recent. You finish Saving the World. This is a sophomore film. The synopsis is mismatched cousins David and Benji reunite for a tour through Poland to honor their beloved grandmother. The adventure takes a turn when the pair's old tensions resurface against the backdrop of their family history. So very personal film from Jesse Eisenberg. He even mentioned that he's Jewish, and he even mentioned that they used his actual family's house in Poland that they were forced to flee during the Holocaust. So it's kind of a very classically written like dramedy. And there's kind of this really funny but also complex dynamic between the cousins, who are played by Jesse Eisenberg himself, and Kieran Culkin. Kieran Culkin is like the big thing in this movie.
The very big
thing. Especially for me, because I haven't really watched Succession. I've watched like a couple episodes. So this was my first experience with like current Kieran Culkin. And I so blown away by his performance. It says mismatched cousins because David is a very like, he went the typical route of like, he's settled down. He's very shy. He keeps to himself. You know, he takes meds, tries to keep it all together. And Benji is kind of he's very charming, but he's like a total loose cannon. And he's kind of a mess. And you find out kind of why that is as the film goes on, and they're kind of processing that together because they haven't talked in a while and there's some tension there. So there are kind of three things going on here. It's like their deeper emotional relationship, them kind of exploring their family trauma and their family history and just that trauma. And then it kind of just as a totally hilarious comedy. Mm-hmm. So what did you think of this film? I feel like maybe I liked this a smidge more than you.
I'm still sitting with it because this one is virtual as well. I might try to turn on one more time before the festival ends. I've been reading a lot of people's reactions to it, reading other people's reviews, trying to kind of grapple with my feelings with it. Overall, I really liked it. I'm not in this place where I dislike it. It's just like a matter of how much I liked it versus, you know, how much I loved it.
Right.
I you know, Kieran Culkin is so impressive in this movie. I know most people know of his abilities to act through Succession, and it's kind of really refreshing to know, oh, it's not just Succession. It's like everything he's going to do. Mm-hmm. He's going to kind of blow us away with his performance. I mean, there's very few people out there, I think, that can do what he's doing in that, like, he can make us laugh really hard in 1 second, and then the next second I feel like I'm about to cry.
Yeah.
From what he's kind of delivering. I really don't know if there's an actor right now who can do that as well as him, and that's why I think it's so good. He's like the perfect person for this movie.
Right.
But I liked it a lot. I mean, I really don't want to spoil like what I don't like about it, because I think that's a conversation for later. This movie was purchased by Searchlight, and that will likely get a release date. I don't, you know, it's January. There's no way I could say Oscar push for Kieran, but I wouldn't be surprised if Searchlight held it closer towards award season, mm-hmm. and did try to kind of capitalize off this Kieran Culkin renaissance. I also have a little bit of insider detail, not really insider detail, but I posted a TikTok kind of talking about the Sundance movies to look out for. And Searchlight themselves commented saying, yep. Kieran Culkin renaissance, which makes me feel like they're also aware of the impact.
They're planting the seeds.
They are getting ready for it. So I wouldn't be surprised if it comes out later in the year. And I think it's going to hit really well for a lot of people, though.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they push for this, because this, we saw this at the, no, it wasn't, was it the premiere?
No, it was the no, it day
wasn't,
after.
It wasn't even the premiere, but mm-hmm. it was at this big giant theater, the Eccles Theater, and it got 2 standing ovations. Like, it got a standing ovation when it ended, and then it got a standing ovation, I think, like, when Jesse Eisenberg left the Q&A. This movie was such a smash hit with the mm-hmm. crowd. It was shocking.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I was laughing my ass off. I was like, this is great. It's nice to just watch a total crowd pleaser. But yeah, when you sit down with it, I agree with you. I think there are some emotional beats towards the end that I wasn't totally satisfied with the conclusion. I wish the reckoning with it had happened a little differently.
We'll save it. It's going to come up later for sure. Like I said, this is going to be a movie that, once it does have its release date, we're going to get a lot of conversations about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's funny because we saw it at 9 in the morning the following day after its premiere. And I think at the premiere itself, it got a standing ovation as well. Yeah. So kind of a testament to its power. People are going to eat it up pretty hard.
Oh, yeah.
So, okay.
That
so
was me, right?
You've done 3. So you've talked about...
That's not true.
A Real Pain, Love Lies Bleeding, and...
I thought you picked Love Lies Bleeding.
Oh, are you not picking Love Lies Bleeding in your 5?
Oh, I am. Okay, so you're counting that for me.
Yeah, of course.
Okay, yes. Fine.
And what was the other one? Something about exhibiting forgiveness.
Exhibiting forgiveness.
Okay, something about forgiving people? Yeah.
All right,
okay,
so you've done Presence and Love Lies Bleeding.
And I will now just quickly move to a little movie called Hitman.
Hitman!
I know Glenn it Powell. Premiered at Venice, and a lot of people have seen it already, but... Glenn Powell, man. Glenn fucking Powell, man. That guy is...
So true.
That guy's a movie star, dude.
He is a superstar. He is a movie star. He is a shining star. He's everything. He is my everything. I'm so obsessed with Glenn Powell right now. It came out of nowhere.
Is he our next big movie star?
He's like our next Tom Cruise. He's our next Richard Gere. I don't even know. He's something.
He is something.
He's got that quality. It's intoxicating.
Effortless quality, too. It doesn't even feel like he's forcing it. Just feels like he's naturally like that.
And he's just going to do it.
I'll be honest. I did not know Hitman was a romantic comedy.
Did you not?
I had no idea it was a romance. You know, all the genres on like everything, like on Letterboxd specifically, says it's a action thriller comedy. It doesn't have romance in there. And I think that's a fair. Really big L on people assigning genres to Hitman, because the biggest part about this movie that I love, besides the fact that there's romance, is that this is like a sexy romance.
Dude.
Like, it is.
Like, sex. Like, they're having sex and it's sexy. I was like, okay, Richard Linklater, you're down with it right now, okay?
For all the people who are having conversations about sex scenes are pointless, you're going to hate Hitman. There is a lot of sex in Hitman. But Hitman's hitting it. The man's getting hit. No, I'm serious. So, like, rom-coms used to be sexy. We used to get like sexy rom-coms where the two leads were like,
yes,
had insane chemistry, and it was sexy. Like,
and
we
it
don't
just
get
treated its sex scenes just I feel like there's almost like an earnestness that has been lost. Mm-hmm. And I will give anyone but you credit for that. I liked, there was one sex scene in that movie. I really liked it. Again, Glenn Powell just killing it as the lead of a romantic comedy. But yes, the romance is a big part of this movie. In this movie is, there's a lot of genres going on, a lot of tones going on in this film, but it is at the heart of it. It's a comedy. It's not so much like an action film. Like, we're like, you know.
Correct. I would not call it an action movie at all.
Thriller.
Thriller,
for
yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe a bit of a mystery.
Yeah, crime to it. Yeah.
And it's, I love the actors playing actors aspect to this. You get to see Glenn Powell. He's like going undercover. You get to see him in like all these different get-ups and doing different performances. It's
amazing.
Just so much fun. And I want to shout out the lead actress, Audria Arjona. Mm-hmm. She kills it. There's one scene. We discussed this on the Patreon episode. You guys went to the premiere. I was at the press screening. There's a scene that got cheers and claps.
Oh my God.
In the middle of the movie. I can't remember the last time I've seen that.
I'm getting chills thinking about it.
Okay. Chills. Calm down.
Dude, that was the first time at the festival where mid-movie, the scene ended and
just eruption.
Eruption of applause. And Glenn Powell's in the audience. I can't imagine the way he felt when that happened. Because that's gotta feel really good, the reaction.
I want him to be
happy. It was an incredible, incredible scene. And if you doubted Glenn Powell as a movie star up until Hitman's release, watch Hitman and then come back and report back and tell me.
But if
me
you
we're
doubted
wrong.
Him and you've seen like Top Gun Maverick, then maybe you just don't know what's going on.
When I love
See
Top Gun
smile
Maverick.
At 10.
Dude, his smile when he saves Miles Teller and Tom Cruise and he like just shows up with his little grin. I'm like, oh, you, I love you.
He's like, hey, by the way, you thought I was an asshole, but I'm actually not. Wink.
And I made this statement on my TikTok and I got a lot of reaction out of this statement. I made the declaration that Hitman is better than Set It Up. As a rom-com,
what
I still believe that.
What? Who? I agree with you.
I know, but well, you know, I got a lot of people were saying, "Whoa, I love Set It Up." There's no way it could be better.
Set It Up is very good.
Set It Up rules. Love Set It Up, but this is, like I said, it's sexier, it's funnier.
Yeah, Hitman feels very adult. Set It Up is a very kind of like young adult.
I completely agree with
rom-com,
that.
Rom-com, very like cutesy, but this one is mature.
Oh yeah,
this
movie
R
fucks
for adults.
Yeah,
it fucks.
It fucks.
Yeah, and Hitman release, it got delayed. No, to June 7th.
Well, it has a date now, and this.
Oh, did it not have a date before? Theatrical release? Question mark. I think it'll end up in theaters. I think it'll be bittersweet because I think it'll be really limited. I think we'll get a Glass Onion situation.
Well, we're kind of circling the drain here. So Hitman has been picked up by the boogeyman themselves. Netflix has purchased Hitman, and they confirmed it will release on Netflix on June 7th. But we're telling you here, as your podcast hosts, if there's a theater nearby showing it, please go watch it in a theater. It is so much more fun in a huge crowd.
Yeah.
I think the movie will do well on Netflix for the people watching it at home and like, you know, turn it on late at nights once they have some time.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, It's just a bummer.
But you say that like you were sure. Just to be clear, is it confirmed at all that it's going to get a theatrical release?
A limited one.
Oh, it is confirmed.
One. Yeah, it is. It will. Like, so Netflix will give it a theatrical release. It'll get like the week before it hits Netflix. It'll have a theatrical release.
Oh,
will
good.
It play in Jackson Hole, Wyoming? I don't think
so. Yeah, but we have had situations where things do so well that they expand it.
Yeah, maybe not
I'm being
really
too much of an optimist.
You are being an optimist, and it's really, really admirable. But Netflix isn't going to waste the money to put this kind of out there when they know they can reel in so many people to their
platform.
just streaming wise. So yeah. If you're in a big city and Hitman's playing near you,
see it
in the theater.
Support it.
If you can't, totally understand. I'm just really excited for people to watch this movie. I think it's gonna.
Same.
Be a huge hit. So.
I'm gonna go see it again. Take my friends or something.
Hell yeah. Yeah. Hitman is on my list of the five. Let's go to your fourth pick.
My fourth pick. Ooh. I'm gonna talk about Your Monster.
Let's do it.
That's my fourth pick.
Tell
I'm surprised some of these you didn't see.
Well, Your Monster is not available virtually.
Yeah.
And Your Monster I would have seen if it wasn't for Delta Airlines and a 12-hour delay.
Think about delays of things.
But anyways, tell us about Your Monster.
Your Monster. So, loved this film. Your Monster is also kind of a rom-com. The synopsis is, after her life falls apart, soft-spoken actress Laura Franco finds her voice again when she meets a terrifying yet weirdly charming monster living in her closet. It's the directorial debut for Caroline Lindy. She also wrote it. It stars Melissa Barrera in the lead role and Tommy Dewey as the monster. So it's kind of this like, it's sprinkled with horror, but I'd say it's mostly like a fantasy rom-com. She, you know, she's going through a lot. She moves home to her childhood home and she meets, I guess it's kind of playing with this concept that we all have like a monster in our closets. That's like there for life, and this is her monster, and it's kind of been with her through her whole life, but they end up falling in love, and the first probably half of this film is just total aces, because Melissa Barrera and Tommy Dewey have such good chemistry, and you literally feel like you are falling in love. Like, it's like that amazing, cozy, fuzzy feeling. I was giggling and I was kicking my feet. just fuzzy. It was so nice. I think this film does kind of suffer a bit from like the short film being turned into a feature length film syndrome. The narrative gets more complicated. It feels like the themes kind of get lost a bit in the middle, but it's endlessly entertaining, even if I don't think the script was perfect. Melissa Barrera, this is her moment. She's so good in this, especially in the finale. I can't wait for people to see her in this, and I'm just so glad she's getting this big win after the whole Scream situation. She's so, so good. And I don't know what the release situation is for this one.
I don't think it's been picked up yet.
I don't think it has either, but I don't see why that's even possible, because there's so many I tweeted about this one and so many people were like, oh my god, I want to see this so bad, I'm so excited. Like, people love Melissa Barrera.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, so this is just very breezy watch, very fun movie, and I compared it a bit to Jennifer's Body. It feels like it has that like Tumblr era, like edgy feminist side to it that kind of reminded me of something like Jennifer's Body. I think Jennifer's Body is better, but it's kind of like that kind of vibe to give people an idea. So yeah, I love this one.
All right. Your Monster, a movie I missed that I hope gets picked up so I can watch
it.
Because I've been hearing, I've only heard really good things about it. So, all right. My fourth pick. I'm picking a movie called Thelma. Directed by Josh Margolin. Here's your plot summary. Deceived by a phone scammer pretending to be her grandson, a 90-year-old woman sets out on a quest to reclaim what was taken from her. Beekeeper part two.
I know. Maybe? Why did you guys not mention the beekeeper similarities?
mainly
I'm
because
so bummed I missed this.
Thelma doesn't need Jason Statham to save her. Thelma saves the day herself.
That's feminism.
This is a movie that stars June Squibb, who plays the titular character Thelma. Also has Parker Posey, who is, if you're listening to this, I'm on my knees begging. Clark Gregg. Clark Gregg of Avengers fame. Agent Coulson. Malcolm
Love
McDowell's him. In this movie.
Love
Richard
Malcolm
Roundtree.
McDowell.
Anyways, great cast. I don't want to spoil too much about this movie, but essentially the plot summary captures exactly what this movie's about. June Squibb is scammed, and so she kind of sets out on this quest to retrieve her money back because the police won't help her, and everybody's kind of saying, like, oh, you're 90, just stay home. And it's a really, really touching story about, like, the elderly kind of reckoning with the fact that, yes, they're older. They fully recognize that they have changed over the last, you know, umpteenth years, but there's still that spirit, like that undying spirit within them that still makes them human. And, you know, the easiness that people just assume that if you're older, you're kind of almost less human. Like
there is a dehumanizing aspect yeah. to age.
And Thelma does a really good job kind of breaking that down. Not only breaking it down, but really poking fun at it. It is some of the hardest I laughed during any movie at the festival. I cried a little bit here and there. It's just some great performances between June Squibb and Fred Hetchinger, who plays her grandson, and Richard Roundtree. I don't know if this has been picked up yet, but it's just a 97-minute quick action comedy. Action is a maybe a little bit of a lofty word. I wouldn't say there's like intense action, but there's action, but more of a comedy drama. And it's just, you know, I feel like it's the definition of feel-good movie. Like, there's going to be very few people who watch this and like walk away not feeling some type of happiness or not want to call their own grandma to tell them, you know, I love them. Great movie. I don't know if it's been picked up yet. Don't know the distribution on this one, but if it does, I think it's going to hit really well with people. So
yeah, Thelma. I've seen not just praise for this, like heavy, I've seen really high ratings coming out for this movie. And yeah, it sounds like something I would love. I was so bummed.
Yeah,
I didn't
there's
get
a
it,
scene where
online.
She's like watching Mission Impossible.
Yeah,
and
I know.
I was like, oh, Cindy's going to eat this up when she can watch it. It's great. It's great.
Well, hopefully I'll get to see it eventually.
Eventually. So that's my fourth pick. Let's go to your fifth pick.
Did I not do five? One, two, three, four.
Fifth one.
Oh, I guess because I said I'm not doing. Oh, yeah. My
you
fifth
picked out
one.
Hitman.
My fifth one.
Who are you giving?
Fifth
like
one,
number
best
five to?
One. I saw the TV glow. I think this is not only the best movie of the festival.
Best movie of 2024 so far?
Yes. All I think about is I saw the TV glow in Dune. It's been like my life the last few days. I saw the TV glow. I'm so sad. I won't be too excited because I'm so sad you didn't get to see this one.
It's okay.
Sophomore feature for Jane Schoenbrunn. Their first film was We're All Going to the World's Fair. Very, very divisive film. I'm going to almost compare this to Rose Glass with Saint Maud and Love Lies Bleeding because We're All Going to the World's Fair, obviously lower budget, first film, less complicated, I'd say almost less accessible. And now they're in their sophomore film, they're making something more complex, but still working with, I think, similar themes, similar style, but also evolving. It feels like they're really evolving as filmmakers. And I saw the TV glow. I mean, the synopsis is teenager Owen is just trying to make it through life in the suburbs when his classmate introduces him to a mysterious late night TV show, a vision of a supernatural world beneath their own. In the pale glow of the television, Owen's view of reality begins to crack. It's very vague. This film is very hard to describe. It's kind of a trip. It's totally surreal. It's all about kind of the fusion of fantasy in reality. It's kind of about this young kid who's played by Justice Smith, who we just saw in Dungeons and Dragons. He's been in some other stuff. And Bridget Lundy Payne, who is so good. I know her most from Atypical, the show Atypical. But they're both incredible in this. And you can't really talk about this film without acknowledging both this and We're All Going to the World's Fair as queer films, as films that are kind of indirectly like an expression of the trans experience because Jane Schoenbrunn is trans. But it all is also just kind of about finding solace in media. And I loved how it approached it with the nuance of looking at it both as something that, yeah, you can find comfort in, but something that is also very dangerous. Like if you lose yourself and you kind of hide in it and you use it as too much of an escape. This also definitely has Cronenberg influences. There are a couple scenes in this that just made my stomach fall out of my ass. Like I was like jaw on the ground, nightmarish. It's a really sad movie in many ways. And I just cannot wait for people to see it and for the discussion that's going to be had about this movie. It just feels totally – I think Jane Schoenbrunn is like a genius. I rewatched We're All Going to the World – this has been a big point of conversation. A lot of people are like, oh, I didn't really love We're All Going to the World's Fair. And I didn't either, but I rewatched it last night. And seeing I saw the TV glow, it's one of those movies that just like completely recontextualized their first film for me. And I think – they're both movies that benefit from kind of having context about the filmmaker and the kind of themes that they like to explore. Mm-hmm. So I loved, loved, loved this movie. I think it is the only movie out of the fest that I'm like kind of overwhelmingly
in love with.
In love with. But again, I don't know if people are going to be able to see it.
I'm soon. Convinced it'll get a release date sometime this year. Yeah, I mean, A24 is distributing it. I don't think they're going to miss a beat on getting this movie out, especially with the amount of praise this movie got at Sundance. I don't think they're going to just like hold on to it. Yeah. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Not.
We okay. shall see.
Good fifth pick. That
Did you
leaves...
do? You have
no,
one more?
I have one more. Yeah, it's between right. two movies right now. I think you've seen both of them. So it's like, what Drum do I roll. Choose here? Oh, man. My heart is... torn.
You can mention the other one after.
Yeah, I'm going to. My fifth one I'm going to choose is a documentary called Ebelin, which is directed by Benjamin Ree.
I knew it.
And it is a documentary about a young boy named Matt Steen, who was a Norwegian gamer who died of a degenerative muscular disease at the age of 25. His parents mourned what they thought had been a lonely and isolated life when they started receiving messages from online friends around the world. That's a very like vague synopsis, so I'll give you a more specific one. Matt Steen was a young man who had this really sad disease that prevented him from, you know, living a normal life in yeah. terms of like going outside and things. So he turns his attention to World of Warcraft and the kind of online community there. And it's a really interesting documentary because it's framed in this way where like the parents just had no idea that their son had this incredibly active lifestyle in this online community. They were convinced like their son was miserable and unhappy and sad and only played games because that was the only thing that made him happy. Mm-hmm. Or like they weren't aware of his like impact. And then after he dies, they are then made aware of the kind of huge impact he had on the World of Warcraft community. And it's like so overwhelming to watch them learn about this entire online world, and it reduced me to rubble. I it's been a second since I've cried to the point where I was like,
wow,
choking, like sobbing, like making a noise. And I think that like it's a really great documentary, not only telling this personal story about Matt's, but also kind of like this, I think it's this perfect documentary for this, not for like the Gen Z crowd. I think it's more for like the Gen X crowd, the boomer crowd, because the parents openly admit like we assumed video games were just like you stare at a screen, you're getting dumber by the second and you're not providing anything to this world. And it's kind of like this mind numbing, face melting experience that does nothing. And then it's really them kind of learning what gaming can provide, like as a, in terms of friendship and love and community. And that has been like the most like eye-opening experience for me when I watched this, like the amount of like older parents who were like, I had no idea you could fall in love with somebody online or like build friendships and family. And yeah, it's a hard watch because you get to the ending and like, you know, they're having the show, the funeral for Matt's, both online and in real life. And it's just a little overwhelming. Not a spoiler, by the way, that you know that happens. But I don't know. It's been a second since I've been moved that much. You know, I grew up with playing games in my life, and I made a lot of friends online. Not that a few that I communicate still to this day. And I think that it does a good job kind of dispelling this popular notion that gaming is fueling only terrible things. You know, that's the clickbait article. Like, oh, you know, people play games and they become terrible people. But there's really this other side of the gaming world that this movie does a great job exploring. And so I loved it. I adored this documentary. I think you said you watched it maybe like just before this podcast, before we started recording.
Yeah, I watched it a matter of hours ago. I know that you loved this one so much. I mean, it's a very well-made documentary. It's like mixed medium because a lot of it is portrayed as like they got people from YouTube who like made World of Warcraft content to come in and like animate the logs of like chats that they had in the game. I thought that was really cool because it's kind of, you know, that was his world. Like it's showing, you know, how he perceived and lived these moments. But mm-hmm. I love your point about how a lot of this is for the older generation, and to kind of approach it through that lens. I think a big thing that this film does is, yeah, destigmatize mm-hmm. gaming and gamers and kind of that world. There is this really awful, you know, I have choice feelings about technology as a whole and what it's doing to society, but you and I both, and I'm sure a lot of people listening, have benefited from and found community in games, in online communities, in the internet. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing today if it wasn't for the film community.
Exactly.
Online. I think it is a bit heartbreaking to hear how his parents had to process, you know, we didn't even know this whole side of him. And I'm sure it feels bad to think, you know, I kind of wrote off what he was doing, even though, you know, he had this rich life and he was able to find a place to have a life. It was a place for him to kind of live out these things. I liked it a lot. I thought it was great. And weirdly enough, I have a friend who experienced something really similar. One of my best friends from high school, his brother ended up passing away from cancer. And I never really knew his brother very well because he was very shy, really kept to himself. But he ran a big Minecraft server and had a huge impact on the Minecraft community to the point where they created a giant shrine to him inside of this. It's like, it's really touching. It's really touching stuff. And you can just tell the people who knew Matt's through World of Warcraft were just really great, great, kind people. Yeah. I know my dad has friends who met through World of Warcraft.
It happens a lot more, especially now that we're living in 2024, where the online communities for Fortnite, Minecraft, World of Warcraft, there's so many servers and games are so popular that I think a lot of people aren't aware that there's so many communities that are important to people. And it really does kind of reinforce that you never know who is behind the microphone, who's behind the screen, what they're going through, what kind of life they live. And this is like one of those really hard hitting documentaries that makes you realize that like this was his life. Yes. Because this is the one life he could live and be whoever he wanted to be.
Right.
I do love the mixed media portion of it. I love that half of this movie is like told through World of Warcraft animation. Really adds a layer of like intimacy that I think works for the documentary. Netflix has purchased it.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that.
It will be a Netflix documentary, which, I know I kind of shamed Netflix as a boogeyman earlier, but I think that
a lot of people
for documentaries is different.
Yeah.
You know, documentaries don't get big, wide releases. And I think that Netflix is a perfect place for a documentary like this, where it's going to be really accessible and people are going to find it and watch it and fall in love with it. I think this is going to be a huge hit on Netflix.
I hope so.
I hope so too. Well, those are our five.
Pick.
Let's recap our five before shouting out honorable mentions.
Okay.
All right. Five I chose. Presence, Steven Soderbergh. Love Lies Bleeding, Rose Glass. Richard Linklater's Hitman. Thelma, directed by Josh Margolin. And then Evelyn, directed by Benjamin Reed. Those are the five I chose. Can you recap your five, please?
My five were I Saw the TV Glow, directed by Jane Schoenbrunn. Love Lies Bleeding, Rose Glass. Exhibiting Forgiveness from Titus Kaphar. Your Monster by Caroline Lindy. And A Real Pain from Jesse Eisenberg.
All right. Shout out honorable mention time. What's okay. the first one you're going for?
Oof. In a Violent Nature.
Hell yeah.
Let's go. man, In a Violent Nature, if I was a braver person, this would be higher. In a Violent Nature, kick-ass horror movie. The first slasher I've seen in a long time that I truly felt did something different. Mm-hmm. But it's a slow-ass movie. And I loved how the director described it. Total vibe movie punctuated by extreme violence. That's like literally exactly what it is.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it can be challenging.
It's a challenging movie. I really, when this hits Shudder, I'm assuming at some point closer to Halloween is my guess. Please sit with it. You know, I know it's going to feel a little slow in the beginning, but, kind of take in that atmosphere, because once it gets going,
It goes. And
the Google searches, I can see them already. Oh my God. Yoga kill. Yoga kill. Come up like a million times. There are, yeah. I mean, there are some scenes I'm thinking to myself, whoever thought of this might need therapy. But I hope they never stop making movies either, because it's like so extreme.
Yeah, I can't even, it's like, and watch it with friends. I saw it at the midnight premiere, and that was so amazing. It was one of my favorite theater experiences of the festival, or maybe ever. But seeing that one, they're all great, but there is one kill that is going to stand out. And it's like you're seeing such crazy insanity that you don't even know what to do with your body. Like, you're like, what do I do? Like, this is so insane. Yeah, definitely one to watch with friends and have fun with it. Like, this movie is laughing at itself as well. It's playing with slasher tropes. There's bland dialogue. People are just sitting there waiting to get killed. Like, it's a good one. Some of you will be obsessed with it. I don't know who it is, but some of you will love it.
Yeah, some people are going to see this movie and like hate it.
Yeah,
but there will be other people who like make it their personality for sure.
Right.
Any other shout outs?
For me?
Yeah.
I want to shout out my old ass.
Shout out your old ass.
I'm going to shout out my old ass because it was pretty good. Megan Park did Fallout with Jenna Ortega. That was a great film. This is yet another. It's just a really funny, really heartwarming coming of age film about a young woman. Megan Park is clearly very good at that.
Yeah. Agree. I'll echo the my old ass shout out. I love my old ass. I'll shout out Kneecap,
which yes.
is a movie that is like about, how do I explain this? I saw someone explain it as like 8 Mile, but for Ireland. And I thought that was a really good kind of comparison.
Oh my God, that's so perfect.
But Kneecap is a movie directed by Rich Pepiot. I could be mispronouncing it. I'm sorry if I am. But it really focuses on like native Irish speakers in Ireland and kind of a rap group in Ireland and their kind of fight for their culture in Ireland. And I think it's a really fun, well-made movie that I wonder if that one gets picked up. I think it's a really good one.
I think it should. Nice like educational movie in a way, because I think it's very easy to think of like Ireland and England and all those things as being kind of just meshing them all together in your head. But there is, you know, culture that's being threatened
exactly, over there. Exactly.
And it was cool to learn about, you know, the Irish language. I knew nothing about all of this. And it's kind of, you know, post-Troubles, Belfast.
That was one of my favorite things the movie opened up with. And it's not really a spoiler, but they talked about how, like, everybody thinks of Belfast and they think of, like, these big moments. And it's like there's so much more to the history of Belfast in Ireland. And it kind of does its best to kind of give you a lot of history in about 105 minutes, but I think it does a good job with it.
Yeah.
Anything disappointed you? Anything you watched you're like, not my favorite? Things that maybe you had higher expectations for? Not like, quote unquote, the worst movies you saw, but just movies that you maybe thought you were going to like and you end up feeling lukewarm or worse.
Yeah, I do have two movies that I think specifically I wanted to be good and I wanted to like more than I did. One of them actually is A Different Man.
This
about, I have complicated feelings about A Different Man because I liked it, I think it feels very classic, like a retro psychological thriller. It has a really it's a transformation film. Like in the beginning, it has some really cool body horror going on. And yet it kind of, as the narrative goes on, it gets a little bit more complicated, maybe less focused, and something just didn't land for me. I'm going to have to keep thinking about this one. But a lot of people loved it. I think some people agree with me. A24 movie, so we'll be seeing that eventually.
Yeah. I've seen some polarizing reactions to it. Yeah. So you're not alone in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I have seen that as well.
What's the other one then?
The other one is Love Me, and I think that's one that you can agree on.
Definitely on my list. Yeah.
Why don't you discuss that?
I mean, we don't want to go too in detail on Love Me. Kristen Stewart, Steven Yeun. It's basically live action. What happens after Wally and Eve kind of settle down in their house together?
And become human.
Yeah, it's a movie. I think it takes some really big swings that kind of don't work. It does have that feeling of, this works really well as a short film, not so much a 92-minute feature. I'm very, very mixed on this movie. I wanted to love it because I love Steven Yeun and Kristen Stewart as actors, but not my favorite. And then one other disappointing one I'm going to pull is Suncoast.
No way.
Yeah. I appear to be a little bit in the minority in this one. I most of the people who have seen it that I'm friends with have at the very least liked it. I don't dislike the movie. I am at a point where I'm like feeling very average on it. I give it a 2.5 on Letterboxd. This is the movie that's going to hit Hulu in a couple weeks, and it stars Nico Parker, Laura Linney, and Woody Harrelson.
Hmm.
I think a lot of people will ultimately like it because it is kind of traditional coming of age story, but I do have some issues with the kind of the overall structure of it. I think it's a little almost too cliche. It feels a little afraid to actually say anything confrontational. I think Woody Harrelson is completely not miscast. I think he's like a nothing burger role. I think he adds nothing to this movie and really kind of distracts from the movie's overall message.
Who is this? It just really landed on the law over here.
I felt very, I was disappointed. I wanted to love it. Nico Parker, innocence. She's amazing in this. She's going to be a star, but overall felt real, real average on this one overall. But like I said, it'll be out in like a couple weeks.
And we'll good to know because it is not available anymore for me online. It's sold out.
It'll be on Hulu. So those are the two that kind of like, felt okay about.
Okay.
Important to note, we're recording this on January 28th. It's a Sunday. The festival's still going on. I have two more movies I want to watch before midnight, and I think I'd be able to get to them. I want to watch Union, the Amazon documentary about the Amazon Union, and maybe Exhibiting Forgiveness. We'll see.
Is that all we have until midnight?
I actually don't know. I assume so.
You might even not have until then because it's... No, it's January. Oh, yeah. January 29th at 1:55 Eastern time. A.M. 1:55 a.m.
Which Eastern means time?
For you have until 11 p.m. your time.
Oh, shit. That's even more. Well, looks like we got to wrap this podcast up.
See ya.
Gotta get going.
Movies to watch.
No, I think, but we've reached a point now where we've talked about Sundance kind of ad nauseum. The important parts of this episode are Sundance is available to everyone. Don't feel intimidated. Actually, it's okay to feel intimidated.
Yeah.
But know that you're not alone in that intimidation. And there are a lot of movies to watch out for, whether they've been picked up or not. Supporting independent film is incredibly important to this industry. And I hope people are interested in all these movies we talked about.
Yeah, well said. I think something we also didn't mention is that volunteering at film festivals is a really great option if there's one near you.
Shout
or
out
even
to the
if
volunteer
it's not,
at Sundance.
Shout out to every volunteer at Fantastic Fest at Sundance. I mean, the people who are either volunteering or who work for the festival, the programmers, the people who work in the press office, so nice, so helpful, so kind. But volunteers, you know, have the opportunity to see the films for free while they're working there to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I think for film festivals, your first experience with a film festival or with a specific film festival, there are some things you just can't prepare for. You kind of just have to go into it, experience it. When we were going into Sundance, I was like, I'm just going to experience it. I'm not going to, you know, get down on myself if I don't see every single movie and all that. So yeah, but it's fun, you know?
Yeah.
It's fun and it's exciting.
It is. Yeah, don't get down on yourself if you can't watch everything. It is. There's no need to do that because there will be movies you miss. Festival FOMO is very real.
Oh, yeah.
Just know you're not alone in that either. I'm going to have it when Can rolls around. Everybody has Festival FOMO. But I think just knowing that if there is a festival local to you, whether that be a big one or small one, try it out because you never know what you can watch. Cool.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, Sid, we've talked about Sundance. Next on the schedule, maybe South by Southwest. We go as a podcast. Who knows?
Maybe. Fingies lot crossed.
On the docket for House of Cinema Podcasts. If you like this episode, check out our Patreon. We have tons of exclusive content there, from horror to animation to news episodes to drafts to
giveaways, movie night, giveaways. Game night.
Oh my god, there's so much stuff. Wow, it's like almost like
talk about an online community.
Talk about an online community. The roomies of House Cinema Podcast. They are great people. And
amazing.
So look into that. If you can't do that, don't worry. There will always be public episodes.
Yep.
And rating and reviewing on Apple, Spotify is very helpful. So next time you hear our voices will be in February of 2024. What movies come out, you may ask? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a little movie where we find out who the real Agent Argyle is.
I'm actually seeing Argyle in January.
Are you seeing it?
I'm seeing it on Tuesday.
Shut up.
I'm going to find out who Agent Argyle is.
No! I'm so jealous.
You know, there is a, you know, probably more likely than not that I actually enjoy Argyle. And I just want to warn you all for that. I don't hate Matthew Vaughn. I just hate...
That's the funniest thing about this whole narrative leading up to Argyle is that I never hated Matthew Vaughn.
But they're making me hate him because they're like, from the twisted mind of Matthew Vaughn, and making me see the Argyle trailer.
Yeah, they did
it a billion times.
The brainwashing is real, but it's real. I trust Matthew Vaughn. I'm excited for Argyle to an extent. Here's the deal about Argyle. If Argyle, the real Agent Argyle, is the cat, I will lose my shit. I'll be so upset.
You'll be upset.
I'll be upset.
I think we need to go in the internet records. Some podcast episode, I was the first one who predicted that. You're going to see people saying that on Twitter now. It was me, because I said it was going to be like a Perry the Platypus situation.
Perry the
and
Platypus.
It was going to be Argyle, Agent Argyle.
If it's the cat, I'll be very upset. If it's a random celeb, if it's Florence Pugh,
we did
Channing
predict.
Tatum.
Who'd you say, Timothy Chalamet? Or do you say
Channing Tatum?
Some people have said Daniel Craig. It could be like a meta thing.
That would be fun. I've heard some theories of it being Taylor Swift, which I think is a very fun internet theory.
Interesting.
Which it's not going to happen, but I think if it's anybody like that, I'll be happy. If it's the cat, I'll be upset.
I think I'm with you. That would be stupid.
So anyways, all right, you're seeing Agent Argyle. So next time you hear our voices, we'll probably be talking about Argyle, and we'll have our full thoughts on that movie.
What else would we talk about?
Well, yeah, luckily things pick up a little bit in February. January was a wasteland.
January was a wasteland, but it worked out in our favor because we were at Sundance. We were like, are we missing anything? And the answer was no.
No. ISS?
ISS, Miller's Girl. Joe.
What?
Did you know that we are seeing Dune in less than a month?
We are seeing Dune Part 2 in less than one
February
month.
February is not technically the month of Dune. But close enough.
But it's close enough. We have fan tickets for February 25th.
Yeah. If you have not heard of this, there is a public AMC fan screening for Dune Part 2 on February 25th, which is like a week early or something. So I think a lot of them are sold out, but double check. Try and get tickets if you want them. But then, March 1st, everyone will see it.
Doing my best to try to secure a premiere invite.
Doing your best.
Doing my best. Yeah.
If you get invited to the premiere and you have a plus one, I'll get on a plane. I know I've said that a lot as a joke, but with Dune, I mean it this time.
It's not a joke. Okay, it's I'll let you joke. Know. Keep you updated. Okay. Yeah, Dune is happening soon, everybody. Dune 2.
Tune.
Question for you, Sydney.
What?
Are you getting? Are you going to get
getting
the Dune 2
popcorn bucket? I'm so glad that you asked. Yes, I'm going to have to, because my only other, I almost don't believe that that's real. How can that possibly be real? They knew exactly what they're doing.
They knew what they're doing.
Their Regal has normal stuff that they're selling, but I'm not going to see it at Regal.
Okay. Neither am I.
So yes, are you going to purchase it?
I've never bought a popcorn bucket in my entire life, but for the Dune Wormussy popcorn bucket,
a bitch I might have to. I might have to
pull my wallet
it's
out for
expensive.
That one. Yeah, it is expensive.
Maybe for the new Tron, they'll have something cool.
I have the Eros Tour popcorn bucket.
Oh, that's okay. I have gotten a few. I have the Doctor Strange one. I have the Ant-Man one. I bought the Burn book, the Mean Girls like cup. Oh, and I got the Avatar. I got all the Avatar stuff.
Bro, you got a bunch of them.
Okay. Well, I've been watching movies for a while, dude.
All right. Well, if you're going to see Dune 2, stay tuned for the podcast. We'll have an episode on that. But for now, thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you guys next week. Have a wonderful day, night, week, and weekend. And we'll see you once we know who the real H&R Argyle is.
Goodbye, listeners.
Bye.